Welcome to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. Your host and man about town, Claudio, has been spirited away to another part of town and is busily right now, I imagine at this hour of the morning, acting in front of the camera. He's doing some movie work, and actually I think it is for a television series, and he will be back next Tuesday. He'll be back the Tuesday after to tell you all about what he's been up to. Anyway, we miss you, Claudio. And also, besides which, he has gotten his art show hung this past Sunday, and he's the featured artist at the Cotton Company in historic Wake Forest. He's also going to be staging recitals of his own writings along with exhibiting his artwork. And you want to find out more about that, you can go to thecottoncompany.net, and you can also go to claudioarts.com and find out all what our great man who goes out there and opens the doors and sweeps the sidewalk and runs the Claudio Speakeasy, and today he's left us to our own devices, so watch out, Claudio. The inmates are taking over. We've got some great guests with us today. We've got Mary Alexian, am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Who's on the board of directors of the Orange County Literacy Council, and Alice Dennison, who's the executive director at the council. Good morning. I'm so glad you're here.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Uh-huh. I want to say before we go further that the Claudio Speakeasy is supported by the Carolina Theater. Carolina Theater is an historic nonprofit performing arts complex located at 309 West Morgan Street in Durham. It's dedicated to presenting vibrant, thought-provoking film and live performances that contribute to the cultural and economic vitality of downtown Durham and Triangle region. The complex includes the last remaining of 13 theaters in downtown Durham. Telephone number there is 919-560-3030, and the website is www.carolinatheater.org for more information. And last but certainly not least, I'm welcoming Rocco. So
How
glad
you're
here Drake? This morning.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Uh-huh. So Rocco's in kind of helping us, helping the denizens of the Speakeasy keep the doors open and business going on as usual.
Claudio and I used to do this show 3 years ago,
uh-huh.
I guess, when he first started.
Yeah. Started coming
we
on.
We had a good time with it.
Well, it's for one thing, Claudio runs a good shop here.
He does.
So he's got a lot of vibrancy and brings in a lot of interesting people. And we're fortunate to have the people, Mary and Alice, with us today. I want to talk, and one of the things that kind of precipitated this is you've got a great event coming up.
We do.
And you want to start, tell us about it. We've got authors coming in, and you've got all sorts of wonderful cooks making meals.
Well, this is our third annual Writers for Readers event, and it's a two-part event. On Sunday, February the 14th, from 5 to 7 p.m., we have what we call the Meet the Authors Gala, and this is a place where you can come and chat one-on-one and in small groups with mm-hmm. our guest authors. And we are so fortunate this year. We have five different guest authors. We have Dorothy Allison, who's well known for her book, Bastard Out of Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Charlene Harris, who writes about vampires.
Uh-huh.
And her books, the Sookie Stackhouse series, has been the base for the True Blood series on PBS.
Uh-huh.
And we have George Singleton, who writes with a great deal of humor, but about some very, very serious, interesting, reflective issues.
Mm-hmm.
And our fourth author is Lee Stringer, who in a former life was a homeless person and a drug addict.
Hmm.
And he has brought his story of the streets to us through Grand Central Winters. And another book that he wrote is a memoir called Sleepaway Camp, which is his stories about being homeless when he was a young boy.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm. And our last but not least author is Wells Tower, who has just published Everything Ravaged, Everything Burned, and is getting great reviews on that book. And I've just finished it, and I have to tell you, it is just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to being able to meet our authors, our reception is being hosted by local restaurateurs and cookbook authors.
Uh-huh.
So we have quite a lineup, and they are so generous. They're bringing some goodies for all of us to nibble on. So we have Jean Anderson.
Yes, we talked about the My Love Affair with Southern Cooking or something like that.
That's right. Yes. She's a James Beard Award winner, uh-huh. So I can't wait to meet her and taste what goodies she's bringing. And we have Sarah Foster from our local Foster's Market.
Uh-huh.
And Morton Neal.
Great.
And Nancy McDermott, who maybe she can turn me into a baker
uh-huh.
with Southern Cakes. John and Dale Reed,
uh-huh.
who just published recently,
Holy Smoke.
Smoke.
The best book, or big book of North Carolina barbecue.
Yes, and right. We will have a little bit of barbecue.
Uh-huh. That's fantastic.
And Bill Smith from uh-huh. Brooks Corners, who will come by shortly, but it's a big day for him.
Right.
So I don't know that he'll be able to stay for a long time.
Well, this is Valentine's Day. So
it is Valentine's Day. I can't think of a better way to treat your Valentine than
absolutely.
To come have some good nibbles
uh-huh.
and enjoy meeting our authors.
And support the love of reading.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a wonderful setting. The university is kind enough to let us use the UNC President's House.
Whoa.
So it's
that's
an
lovely.
Elegant setting.
Yeah.
With wonderful cooks,
uh-huh.
wonderful hosts. One of my co-chairs is Hodding Carter.
Uh-huh.
And it's a wonderful occasion to be able to meet with him and speak with
right.
him as well.
Right.
So that's Sunday. And
uh-huh.
we've just gotten started. So on Monday is our luncheon event.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, again, we're having it at the Carolina Inn, who is one of our presenting sponsors. And at this event, we will have one of our client students mm-hmm. and their tutor talk to us about literacy
mm-hmm.
and why this is so important from their point of view.
Right.
And each of our authors are invited to speak about their experiences
mm-hmm.
and what their thoughts are around literacy. And both at the lunch and at the reception, you have an opportunity to purchase books and have
mm-hmm.
books that you purchase there signed.
Mm-hmm. So the authors will be at the luncheon as well.
Oh, yes.
Yes, definitely.
Yes. And
do you spread them out along the tables? Or
we do. So come early, get a good seat.
Yes.
You can learn more about our event
uh-huh.
at our website, www.orangeliteracy.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find out more about the event and purchase tickets online or call us, and we'll be happy to help you out.
And the tickets are still, you still have some tickets available.
We still have some tickets.
Uh-huh.
There are a few left for the reception. And so if you're into meeting the authors and really talking to them,
mm-hmm.
you need to think about signing up soon.
Yeah, because it's this weekend, and they're gonna go. About how large a group do you generally have for your events?
So we have about 125, 130
mm-hmm.
for the
mm-hmm.
reception. That's about all we can host at the President's House.
Right.
And then at the luncheon, we have around 200 people
mm-hmm.
or so.
And it raises a goodly amount of funds, I would think, for the for the Literacy Council.
It does.
Yeah.
And these are funds that we use for all of our programs.
Mm-hmm. And it's we're going to get into talking about the programs, but I think because normally we can't say what prices are because we can't sell things, but you're a nonprofit, so go ahead and tell us. Well, how much are the tickets?
So our reception tickets are $100 per person.
Uh-huh.
And luncheon tickets are $50
okay.
per seat.
Do you have a two-for-one sale? Or
No.
It's a fundraiser.
Like I said, we're a nonprofit.
Exactly.
But we do appreciate, you know,
right.
people coming out. And if you can't make the event and wish to make a donation
mm-hmm.
instead, that's also gratefully accepted.
Right.
We can't do the things that we do without the support of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a wonderful way for the community to not only support us, but to have a wonderful experience.
Right. Well, let's talk about why why a literacy program? Why, I mean, when you consider the public education, and particularly in Orange County, our area, mm-hmm. where you have, you expect everybody, we've got the highest number of PhDs in the country or something like that, and yet there's still a literacy program, literacy problem. Let's talk, tell us a little bit. What is the problem? Why is the problem? And what are you doing about it?
A lot of questions.
Yes, exactly. So we've got an hour.
The problem, you wouldn't expect it here with the university.
Right.
But we have one, and it's quite large. We estimate that about 12% of the population has difficulty with literacy.
Uh-huh.
And somewhere between 12 and 15, we consider functionally illiterate. Technically, it's below a fifth grade reading level.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means is you don't function well in society
mm-hmm.
because you can't read the very basic things that you need to get by in life. Street signs, medicine bottles,
mm-hmm.
Directions of how to do something.
So it's like 12% of the people in Orange County not able to read a medicine bottle.
They're not able to read well enough
to comprehend what they're reading. Right?
What we find is a lot of people have some reading skill,
mm-hmm.
but it's very, very low level,
mm-hmm.
and it's not enough to get by. So people think of illiteracy, they think you can't read or write at all.
Right.
And they can a little bit,
uh-huh.
Which helps them to develop these coping skills
right.
that they have to get by. But it's there for a lot of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
For as many people as we have, as many students as we have, there's a reason. It could be that there was illness in the family, or they were ill when they were a child, or there was social promotion, which was a big thing
right.
way back when.
Right.
But for some reason, it just didn't click with them.
Mm-hmm.
And once they didn't learn, and once they found out that they could kind of get by without it, they didn't
right.
focus on it.
Right.
We have other students who, you know, have a high school degree, or they have their GED.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been so many years since they read in earnest
mm-hmm.
that those skills have faded.
Interesting.
And, you know, if it's 30 years you've been working a job where you didn't have to read.
Right.
Then, and you didn't read, you know, as a
mm-hmm.
hobby or
right.
even the paper every day, you lose the ability and you have to regain it.
Uh-huh. Well, if you're, I'll sit here as a devil's advocate. If they've gone 30 years in a job and without having really developed reading skills, why do they need it?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Think about what you do today when you go look for information.
Uh-huh.
You go to the computer and you go
on right.
the web. And most of that, although there are lovely graphics
uh-huh.
and there's lovely video, most of it's verbal. Most of it's written.
Written, right.
We've started a program last year over at UNC with working in conjunction with the training and development, or
uh-huh.
training and talent, I think their name is now. And UNC had gone to an all-online payroll system
uh-huh.
and benefit system. Well, they had a lot of employees that didn't use a computer very often or
uh-huh.
at all, you know, either at work or at home. They had no idea how to get into their payroll. They had no idea to find out how much vacation time they had.
Uh-huh.
So we started working with them
so
on a program.
So there's computer literacy,
them.
which is another thing. I mean, you might be able to read a page, but you can't access the information on a computer.
But what we found that, you know, there are a lot of people who need help with both
right.
areas. And some it was just computer literacy.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't gone on to it. But a lot of people we found had functional illiteracy along with, you know, the inability to use the computer.
Right.
But the computer also was a very empowering thing for them. So when they
oh,
began
certainly.
to work on it, and they realized that even though I'm not a good reader, I can't read this, I can move around on the computer and
right.
I could look something up. And all of a sudden it becomes a tool
right,
that,
exactly.
that catches their interest.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to learn more. They want to build a reading skill. They want to be
yes.
their writing skill. You know, they want to email
mm-hmm.
like everyone else does.
Exactly.
You know,
Well, you've gone from using a telephone, which you don't really need to have to read to use a telephone, and nowadays it's you're texting and you're emailing
and Twittering.
And Twittering. Well, I'm staying away from Twitter. That's a little bit much.
But think about how you use a telephone.
Right.
You know, you plug in everyone's numbers and
yeah.
you look them up on your telephone. You don't memorize numbers like you used to anymore. Mm-hmm. And your phone can do so much more. There are really many computers now.
So there's different levels of literacy then. It's not just, well, it's somebody who will pick up a written page and can't read anything. There's basic level, and then there's literacy, being literate in different areas. Like I did get on the internet myself and looked, and they talk about prose, poetry, and what's the other one?
Numerical
literacy. And, I mean, it's a lot more detailed than you would anticipate.
It is, and were I an expert on that, mm-hmm. Well, I would speak profoundly.
Audrey.
Yeah, because here we have an educator, and I wanted to get to Rocco because your experience.
To get back to your question about why it's so important, I think reading, as most of us, all of us know, is the key to knowledge in our society, the culture for thousands of years. And if you go back simply to the Greek philosopher Thucydides, who said knowledge is power,
right,
and it has value for living. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
So reading has value for living, the way we live our lives. It's so important. And in the schools, the public schools, the two most important courses you would have would be the communicative skills, reading, and digital skills, the numbers and the math. And they're always reinforced over and over and over again when a kid goes to school as a kindergarten student up to when he graduates from high school. But without that reading skill, you're going to have a tough time if you can't read in this world.
Well, in your experience in education over the last almost 40 years?
40 years I spent in the public schools.
What do you find in kids going through school? When they get out of high school with their high school diploma, does that mean that they're functionally literate or not?
As they're saying, many of them are. It depends on how you define functional illiteracy.
Right.
In other words, where do you put the bar
to
decide who can read and who can't read? But so many people cannot read well. And not only can they not read well, when they do read something, they don't understand what they're reading. There's so many variables. And in my experience, I've seen the schools and the states cope with trying to figure out ways how to help children read. And there is no magic bullet. There is just not one way that this state is going to take on this program and go with it and try it and use it, and it's going to work well for everybody.
Yeah, and that, you know, we do some one-on-one tutoring. And one of the advantages of that is we can adapt how we coach and work with our students to meet their styles. And sometimes our students have very different learning abilities, and they learn in different ways, and it lets us really key different techniques to their own preferences. And in a classroom, you can just do so much.
Right.
And the other thing is, you know, it's true, some of our students go through high school and get their diploma and still can't read. But some of them don't make it through. We all know that North Carolina, in particular, has a very tough problem around dropout rates in high schools. So we do get clients who want desperately to go back and get their GED so that they can have a better job and things like that. And where they may have been able to read at a 6th or 7th or an 8th grade level, because they haven't been reading, they come to us, and now they've dropped back to 4th and 5th grade. So it's helping them to not only just learn how to read, but to reach some life goals they have around earning a diploma, you know, getting the next job. I always think about, you know, we have this great set of authors coming to us. And, you know, I've read something that each of them has written, and I keep thinking about, well, on the wings of their words, they've taken me to all kinds of interesting places. But if I couldn't read, I've missed out on something.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's a quality of life that's just as important as, well, because I could read, I mm-hmm. could earn a living, mm-hmm. I could have the lifestyle that I wanted to have. So it's not just about helping people to build their work skills and their functional skills. It's also opening up other parts of their life.
Quality of life.
Their quality of life.
Right. Value for living.
Value for living. Our authors tell us things, you know, they may put it in fiction, but they're really writing about their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So our students who come that can't write, their stories can get lost.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now that I'm retired, and I do still keep up going to classes and what have you, but a lot of the folks at my age, we want to leave behind our stories for our children mm-hmm. and for our grandchildren. And some of our clients, they're missing that opportunity, and right. they want to be able to do that as well.
So we're talking about reading, and now we're talking about writing. And is there a difference there? I mean, learning how to read and then learning how to write. Is there some other type of thing that's involved in teaching someone to be able to put their thoughts down on a piece of paper?
Well, in some ways, they go hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
In working with our students around writing, we'll help them in terms of giving them prompts.
Mm-hmm.
Always try to write about things that they're interested in writing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't get the words down on paper, let them tell you the story.
Right.
And begin to write their story in their words.
Right.
And then let them see how their words look on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Let them read it to understand how it hears, and to begin to work with them in terms of how you can craft that into a better structure, into something that tells the story in a way that you want it to be told in a way that's memorable.
And the way you, if somebody was telling you this story, the way you would want to hear it.
Yeah.
So it's in some ways you're giving them permission to tell their stories. I mean, because a
yes.
lot of times mm-hmm. I think people think that, well, nobody wants to hear this. It's
mm-hmm.
not important. It's only important to me. So you're saying, yes, you can tell your story and I will listen. I mean, that's one of the big things, I think, in this world is listening to people, especially people who have maybe not had as many opportunities to be heard. So that you're giving them permission to tell their stories, and then you're giving them the fact that the story is not just here, you can tell it, but yes, it's valuable.
That's right.
And I think that's where you get the writing. It's not just the taking in with reading, because you're reading everybody else's words that are big and important, but it's giving importance to your words. And I think that gives you an ownership of the language, I would think.
It does.
Uh-huh. And you have a creative writing. That's one of the services that you provide.
We do. We have a creating writing program that we work
mm-hmm.
with over at the shelters
right.
on a weekly basis. And it is a prompt
mm-hmm.
to bring people out and to help them express themselves
mm-hmm.
on a regular basis in a very organized way, but, you know, in a very freeing way
right.
to them.
That's one of the things we mentioned before we went on the air was I asked if you had a connection with the Talking Sidewalks project that the students over on Carolina at the
mm-hmm.
Y have put together, and they put out they just put out their third magazine, Talking Sidewalks, which is a great magazine it's on newspaper print paper, and it's
mm-hmm.
it's given around. I can't tell you exactly where you can pick it up, but you could pick it up at the Y. You could call the Y and ask them where they've distributed it.
We don't have the third copy, but you could pick it up at our offices as well.
Right.
They have done a wonderful job with that program in putting it together and in getting people's writing out.
Yeah, because they've been working at the shelter, and everything there that is written on in this magazine has been written by a homeless person. And the pictures that are there have been taken by people who are experiencing homelessness. And it's quite a valuable thing they're doing, and it's good reading.
It is.
It's just It's a way of remembering that we need to look at people as the individual person and not their particular situation at the moment. So, well, what about some of the other things? You've got family reading program?
We have a family reading program. We do it with funding from the Partnership for Young Children, Orange County Partnership, the Smart Start program. And it's working with parents to learn how to read to their children, to learn the importance of reading to their children, because it's so valuable at that early age to have books, to read books, to build literacy skills. It's not necessarily just reading. We have a wonderful set of puppets that we use because we're teaching language skills as well. We have parents work on putting books together on their family history or their something that's of interest to them and their child. Anything that they can do to build those skills, so it's an ongoing, it's a very kind of organic language building with children, because by the time they go to school, they should have built up, you know, a huge vocabulary of words. And if they're not hearing it and they're not having that interaction on a regular basis, then they start school behind.
Right.
And they don't catch up.
And also seeing books used in the home accents the value, the importance of it. So they see that this is important to their parents.
You can really see the difference in students where the parents really made an effort when the children were young, the first 6, 7 years, 8, 9 years in their life, and made an effort to read to them, work with them, do something with them academically. It changes everything, where the neglected child is always, you know, behind.
I would imagine if my parents were big readers, but I would imagine that if you didn't see your parents reading at home, it wouldn't be an activity that you would normally go off and do on your own. If mom and dad, you know, just sit and watch television all night, that's what you do.
Right.
Because that's the norm for your home.
Children usually do what they see their parents and other people do, not what they are told what to do.
Don't do what I say.
It's amazing, really.
Do what I do.
The kids copy what they see and experience, and it goes on continuously. So parenting is so important, and I guess people are always trying to figure out how to raise their kids, and they have problems with them. I think the Egyptians were writing about they couldn't handle their kids.
Oh, these teenagers.
And they were testing it.
Exactly.
Dinner.
Go back to the Egyptians, and no one has the magic formula to raise your kids this way, and what's the best way.
Yeah. So it's difficult also when today you've got two working parents who are busy going, you know, trying to earn a living and to have what they're thinking of as a quality of life by being able to provide, you know, iPods and big houses, et cetera, when maybe we're missing out a little bit on the quality of life, which would come from having time to sit down and actually be with
Audrey, I think we live in a different world. It is changing so quickly, so fast, we don't even see it happening. But if you look at the last 15, 20, 25 years, look at letter writing. People don't write letters anymore.
That's true. They text.
You're talking about writing. The way people write now is different than the way they used to write, say, 50 years ago. If you look at someone who wrote someone a letter in 1930, it was very formal and very organized, and it was punctuated properly. People just write little phrases and send them on the Internet, and the writing has changed.
Now, and the spelling is different.
But exactly.
You know, you and I, it's a you.
But also, you're talking about authors. Authors are people who like to write and want to write books or articles. Just like someone wants to play baseball, they're going to, you know, not really stress academics when they're in eighth grade. They want to go out and play ball because they want to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, the people that go out and write books like to write and they want to write, and they're basically basically pretty good at it, and they can get a book published. But most people in this world and in this country do not write books or articles that get published.
Or letters.
Or letters anymore. So it's when you read something that's published, it's done by someone who likes to do that and wants to do it. And when people want to do something and they enjoy it, they usually do a pretty good job with it.
Well, they also take the time and attention to make it easy to read and to comprehend. I don't know whether you get emails and you look at them and you think, I don't know what that means.
We have a whole new language out there now.
That's true, the email language. Because I'll get, you know, these little, like, letters, LOL, which is an easy one. It's you know, laughing out loud. But it's all these other things that, you know, a series of letters that stand for something else. They're acronyms for a statement, and I'll have the same thing. I recently, and I can't remember exactly what it was. Maybe it was BTW, by the way. Or it was that one I'm familiar with. There was something else I don't even remember.
Text
and I had to go back and say, what is BXZ2 or something?
You know, I think we need a dictionary called ETC.
Yes.
You know, I'm waiting to get a book one day that's written in that.
Oh, my goodness. It'll happen, especially now that you've said it. Somebody's going to do it and probably make a lot of money. I think I'll go home and write it.
If you look at textbooks that the kids use in school, if you look at a textbook, say, that was published in 1925 or 1935 for an eighth grade level public school course, that book is written at a level that would be considered a college level today. It's amazing. If you look at some of the old textbooks, how well they were written. A world history book that was used in 1940 for high school would be at a college level. If you looked at the college level textbook today that the college students here at Carolina or anywhere are using, the way that that book is written is really not much different than a much earlier textbook for eighth grade or sixth grade.
Well, now, sixth grade is mostly pictures.
I don't know. Here's another
anyway,
thing.
I'm just pulling
it was
you.
Used in the sixth grade or seventh or eighth grade or in ninth or tenth grade in the schools. And compared to what's in the schools now, it's completely different as far as the level of reading.
Right.
Well, the one good thing about electronics and all of this advancement that's going on is there are all kinds of interesting ways to get yourself or your children to get interested in things. You know, it's no longer about a blank piece of paper or just words on a paper. There's all kinds of interactive learning experience that can happen. And some of those tools we even use with our with our students to encourage them to find new ways, and it's a lot more exciting than sitting there with a book and a pencil.
Well, I remind everybody that we're talking with Mary Alexian and Alice Dennison with the Orange County Literacy Council, and Rocco's here helping us out, and it's to let everybody know about their fundraising event. Tell us again what the fundraising event is.
So it's our third annual Writers for Readers. It's a two-day event on Sunday, February the 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. We have our gala reception where you can come and chat with our guest authors, Dorothy Allison, Charlene Harris, George Singleton, Lee Stringer, and Wells Tower. And we're fortunate that at our reception, our guest hosts, who are also authors, in this case they are cookbook authors, are bringing some of their well-known nibbles for us to enjoy. So you'll be greeted by people like Jean Anderson and Sarah Foster and Martin Neal, Nancy McDermott, John and Dale Reed, and Bill Smith.
And there are still tickets available?
And there are still tickets. You can purchase tickets online at www.orangeliteracy.org. Reception tickets are becoming scarcer, so please do sign up soon. Reception tickets are $100. We still have lunch tickets available for Monday, where you will hear our authors speak about their experiences and their thoughts on literacy. and have an opportunity to purchase books and have them signed by the authors. And those tickets are $50, and they're also available at our website, orangeliteracy.org.
And all this goes to support, every cent goes to support the kind of work you do.
That's right, and without the community support, we would not be able to do the things that we're doing.
Right.
And so we really appreciate the community, and this is a wonderful way not only to help us out, but for you to have a good, enjoyable time.
Right. And Alice, I think you brought something there about why authors writing on reading and why it is important, literacy.
I did. This is a it's a handmade book that we put together back at our 20th anniversary. Mm-hmm. We had a number of local authors write about why reading was so important to them and why they love reading.
So everybody, this will be part of our radio theater. And Alice is going to read for the Speakeasy's radio theater.
Oh, the pressure is on. This is a writing by Leanne Couch, and it's one of my favorites in the book. To delight, to instruct, to eavesdrop, to forget. It's reincarnation without the nasty dying. It's looking in a neighbor's window without the embarrassing arrest. It's a miracle of human sympathy. Reading is power. Personal and political, pure and simple. The act of reading frees us from the constraints and the terrors of real time while making us more human. A good story allows us to travel through and reflect on the whole of another life, making it harder to pick up the proverbial stone of judgment. We feel kinship with the characters and long to be their guardian angel. When we put the book down and go to sleep, we want our friends to stay suspended in a kind of tranquility. Of course, it rarely happens this way. Even in books, there are few happily ever afters will swallow anymore. But the desire to make them so and the ability to see how it works out is a respite from the struggle of our own days muddling through decisions, doing the best we can, and never knowing our place in the story. Mark Strand's fine poem, Fiction, describes the solace of reading this way, a presence hard to define that lets us know without spelling it out, not to despair. If the end has come, it too will pass.
That's great. I can see why you picked that as one of your favorites in there. Is that book still available? This was put together for
our 20th anniversary, which was 5 years ago.
5 years ago.
We're just celebrating our 25th now.
Uh-huh.
We have, literally a handful of these left, but at some point we always told ourselves we put it up on the web.
That's what I was going to ask, is if it's up on, if you put it up on the web, let me know, because I don't want to take your last, one of your last few remaining copies, but I would love to be able to read it. It sounds, as
absolutely
a book person, you know.
I think I know what one of my AmeriCorps will be doing a little bit later.
Uh-huh. Well, let's talk about another thing you do, which is English for speakers of other languages, which is, I had asked the question, how is that different from English for as a second language? It's just got an O in there, ESOL instead of ESL.
What we found is that for a lot of our students, English wasn't their second language. It might be their third or their fourth or, in one gentleman's case, his fifth.
Wow.
So we look at it as English is the language of the land that they need and want to learn here. English is a second language, English is for speakers of other languages. I still do it.
Right.
It's a program we started about 3 years ago in earnest. We had always worked with people on an individual basis who needed it, but we really started the program in earnest. We teach it mainly in small groups. It tends to work very well that way. We have everything from very beginning. This is what a first and last name look like. This is what an address looks like that you would put on an application. Or this is what money looks like. This is how much it's worth.
Currencies.
All the way to conversational classes where the reading and writing skills are very good, but the verbal skills, they need some work with that. As Mary said, this is a program where we use a lot of interactive work on it. We have lovely new office spaces in Carrboro that I think we moved into back in midsummer, and we have a full computer lab in there now.
Great.
And we have several programs where the students can come in and they work at their own pace, and it's very interactive. They have the headsets, and they talk back with it, and it monitors their progress and their time and that kind of thing. But it helps them build those skills. And then we have a number of conversational groups where they'll get together with people not necessarily knowing the same original language. Their native languages are different.
That's what I was thinking is, I mean, how does that work if you've got somebody from Russia and somebody from Argentina and somebody from Taiwan and they're all trying to learn English when they don't have a common base language?
English will become their common base language.
Right.
A lot of folks,
gesturing.
Well, there is. I mean, there is some of that.
Right.
But most of the people that we have coming in who are learning ESL have a little bit of language skill.
Uh-huh.
And there is a lot of learning and building up. We do a lot of work with the Burmese refugees. And with those are somewhere we do have classes that are just Burmese students because we do have that language barrier.
So there are that many?
There are.
Uh-huh.
We do a class over at the Carolina Apartments.
Uh-huh.
They offer us space over
okay,
there
great.
A couple of times a week. And they are very basic classes.
Uh-huh.
And then those students build their skills and they can graduate into classes where they can handle working.
About how many people would you have in a class at a time?
Our classes are small.
Uh-huh.
We call them small group classes.
Right.
And we try to have between no more than five or six in a class just because we want everyone to have a chance to talk and to interact.
Right.
And also for the pacing, we want people to be comfortable. Sometimes the larger classes just go, you know, at too fast a pace for some people
right.
or too slow a pace for them.
Right.
So we want to make sure that they get the most out of that time that they're learning with us.
That's interesting because the first thought is that you mainly, as your ESOL, would be working with Spanish-speaking people. And there's other people besides.
Anywhere else in the state, it would be Spanish-speaking,
right.
probably. But Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County is just a different animal
right.
for that. We still do work with a lot of Spanish-speaking students.
Well, surely.
But we have a lot of other nationalities as well.
How do you get the word out to people who perhaps are not going to be able to read flyers or signed in information? How do they find out about the Orange County Literacy Council?
It's really varied.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
People that they know who have gone through classes and will talk about it or talk about doing work with us. We go through a lot of the agencies that people may be working with already,
mm-hmm.
Social service agencies or, other groups. We work with a lot of churches
uh-huh.
to get the word out. Civic organizations, anyone that, can help us get
right.
the word out about that. We talk to the schools, what parents
uh-huh.
might be, could they target?
Well, Alice, how many people do you reach, say, in a year? Students?
Students. Last year, we worked with,
and
that's how we look at it because we, with several of the different programs, they're not ongoing students. For ongoing students, we worked with about 321 people last year. 176 of those became full-time students with us.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of dropout in adults because in adult programs
sure.
because they have so many other things
right.
that pull in their time.
But that's still great. That's a lot of people. You're helping, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great program you ladies have.
It's a wonderful program. We have about a 60% progress rate with our students, which is very high. We're one of the highest in the state.
Well, in three or four years, you're reaching 1,000 people. If you have 300 people that you touch base with in some way or another within a year.
We are. But keep in mind that with adult learning, it's a long-term process. So some of our folks may be with us for several years before they're ready to graduate on.
When you consider what I always like to think about is the ripple effect. I mean, okay, you've got this large base that you're making contact with, and then from that you've got some that will become full-time students. But the ones that you've just made contact with are also making contacts with other people, so it spreads.
It does. It also spreads to their family.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of literacy as a multi-generational or illiteracy as a multi-generational problem,
right.
then the more that we can do with the adults...
Mm-hmm.
the more that will affect the children.
So the adults who maybe have never been read to, might start reading to their children. And I imagine in some cases you have children reading to the parents. If the parents are, because kids get into school and they begin to pick it up more. It's because they've got playmates, et cetera, et cetera. It's could be more difficult for an adult to acclimate with the language.
It is, and I will tell you that, and that plays into one of the programs that one of our just a wonderful program that we have up at New Hope Elementary, where we work with the parents of the non-English speaking children, the children who are in the English language program, because they need help in communicating with teachers and administrators and their own children, because the kids are learning English very quickly.
Right.
And the parents need to learn English as well.
Mm-hmm. And children seem to learn faster.
Yes.
I had been told many times, well, once you're past a certain age, and I don't know, people have different ages, like once you're past the age of 30, you're not going to be able to really learn another language. And I'm sorry, I'm not perfect in Spanish, but I can get along in it. And I didn't start to learn it until I was in my 40s. You have to realize you can still learn another language regardless of how old you are. You could become functionally literate.
There's something else I'd like to mention, that in getting the word out, is we don't charge for our services, which is another reason why support is so important.
Right.
So the word of mouth around, there's a place that can help you, and it's not going to touch your pocketbook.
Right.
Is also key in helping us to attract new students and to help others.
Mm-hmm. So have an idea about how you find the people that could use your services. How do you get your volunteers, and what kind of training is involved? I mean, like I would say, I don't know how I would teach somebody to read. I don't know if I could volunteer to do that type of thing. So how do you train them, and where do they come from, and how do you get them?
They come from everywhere. Mm-hmm. We have a very good relationship with RSVP down at the Senior Center. We get a number of volunteers from there. We get a number of volunteers from the university and from the students who are working there. We do a lot of work with Project Literacy, which is, I think, some way tied into the Talking Sidewalks. But we do the same kind of advertising in the community with civic groups and churches and flyers that we put up. We have the volunteer sites where we run information, and people around here are very inclined to volunteer, very philanthropic, not only with their resources, not only with their monetary resources, but with their time. So we have a number of people who come in and volunteer, and from there we begin to place them and talk with them about what they're interested in and what they want to do. We have volunteers who tutor. We have volunteers who work with our infrastructure, our board, and
Mary, you've been a tutor in the past, right?
Oh yes, and I can tell you, I heard about it through an article in one of the local papers, and I went, well, maybe I can do this because I came out of a very technical background and a business background, but I never taught.
Right.
And I have to tell you from experience, you don't have to be a teacher to be a tutor.
Okay.
And the council gave me the tools that I needed and the confidence I needed to work with a student. And you learn to adapt to your individual student.
Right.
And the most important thing that you bring to the table is a willingness to build the relationship. And your student loves it when you don't know something or when you make a mistake.
Yes.
We always liked that when we were kids and saw the teacher, not get it straight. So you don't have to worry about being perfect. Don't worry about that at all. Just have a willingness and a desire to sit down and to work with people on a committed basis.
And you have a training process to tell people how to do that.
So we talked earlier about how to help a student get started writing. Well, I didn't know how to do that.
Right.
So, the Gouts taught me about, give them a lead or have them tell the story, write down their words, help them read it aloud. So there are all kinds of techniques that we help our tutors learn with. And once you've had some training, we also do follow-up workshops where you can learn from each other about different techniques as well as other things.
See what works.
And if you're not inclined to do tutoring, we've got all kinds of things that we could always use help with.
Okay, what else do you need
so
help with?
So we can always use help with marketing, and we can use help with doing events, and we have some back office work that could be done, and if you have a... We always could use some technical help around computer servicing and things like that. So the more that we can alleviate the staff from doing those things, you know, it lets them spend more time with clients, and that's really where our focus needs to be.
I noticed on your website you have a wish list. Can you tell me offhand something about office equipment and paper supplies? And
office equipment,
can
paper
donate.
Supplies, book funds. I'm drawing a real blank on this. I apologize.
Well, let me just, you say book funds. Now, would you accept donations of books?
We do accept donations of books. A lot of times we'll go through them and look for things that will be appropriate for our clients to learn to read. And there are some things that, you know, we've done book drives in the past, and we've had an overwhelming turnout
I would think
of books.
You would be swamped in books.
We did it 1 year, and we thought we'd get 1,000 books. We got 3,000.
I believe
And we did it a second year thinking, well, people have cleaned out their bookshelves, and we'll be fine. We got 4,200. And we said, we can't do this
we
anymore.
Do you ever have book sales like the library does?
The library says, you know, they have a book sale. It's the only place where you can bring all of your books so you can clean out your house, and then you take home another cartload
exactly.
of books.
Exactly.
We have, but we have gotten some donations in, and we just got some that the kids over at Caroline Friends School brought us from a book drive that they had done. But we've put in, I don't know whether you've heard of Book Crossings. It's a put the books in the wild kind of...
Yes.
We've just set ourselves up as a book crossing site.
I didn't know that was still active.
It is. Uh-huh. It is. And obviously you haven't gotten the emails that had our name and our books on there.
No.
But it's a wonderful little program where, you know, you take a book and you...
Put it anywhere.
You put it anywhere.
A little sticker or something in it.
A little sticker and a tracking number so they can kind of figure out where
the book
goes. But we have several books that we've put on for Book Crossing as well.
I'll have to look that back up on the net and get involved with it again.
But we do take donations of books. We we just are very clear to let people know that they may not stay with us very long, that we may give them away to another group where it's more appropriate.
But to get back, while we've got a few more minutes left before we need to give our following show some time to get in here, I'd like to know a little bit more about the time commitment for a volunteer. Like, how long does the training take, you know, your regular training schedule, and then how long a commitment do you want from them, and how often do they meet their
student?
And
To begin with, we do give people a formal training at the very beginning, and Mary's right after that, because they go off in different directions, and they have students who have different needs that we do follow-up trainings. We also have a lot of information available for them, and we'll work with them as closely, with as supporting them as they need. We look for people to tutor about 3 hours a week, if we can. We have some people who can do a conversation class or do some other work, and it's much less than that. We can bring people in if they want to do office work, and it can be for whatever time period.
Is the tutoring done at your offices?
It's done at our offices, but also other places. We no longer have an office in Hillsboro, but we have a lot of places that loan us space to use. So we have a lot of tutoring going on up there. We have classes going on in other places as well. It's just whatever's convenient for the student and the tutor. We don't want to make them have to come all the way to our office if they can meet somewhere else.
So conceivably they could go to the Open Eye or something and have a tutoring class, conceivably, if it was agreeable.
If it was agreeable.
Right.
But a lot go to the library, to some of the churches in the area. And they work with their students there. So it doesn't have to be on site. We're just in a position where we now have a little bit more space than we did before, so we have room for them.
And how many tutors do you have?
We have about 100 tutors at a time. And some of them do small groups. Some of them do one-on-one. We have about, I think we have about 76 one-on-one matches. Was the number. We've been doing grants, so we've been pulling all these numbers up. And I think we had about 76 matches last year. And then we had Probably about 30 classes going on in different ways, shapes, and forms.
And do tutors stay about how long? Say, if I was matched up with somebody, how long is it possible to say how long that commitment would go for? I mean, would you say, well, you could expect at least 3 months or 6 months? Or
we ask people for a 12-week or a 40 or a 24-week commitment.
Okay.
Because it used to be when I first came on that we would just have them. It was like a lifetime commitment.
Yes.
And I think it might have scared people off.
Yeah.
So what we've tried to do is put it into manageable pieces, about a semester's worth. And then they can continue on if they'd like, but if they need to take a break, if they're, you know, traveling or they have another commitment, then it's something that we expect rather than something that catches us.
Right. Well, we're getting just about close to the time when we need to sign off on what's going on here. But is there something important that we haven't touched yet that you really would like to get out to our listeners? And if not, we can then remind them what this Orange County Literacy Council event is.
So once again, it's Writers for Readers. We have five stunning authors, Dorothy Allison, Bastard Out of Carolina, Charlaine Harris, who wrote the Sookie Stackhouse series, which is the base for True Blood, George Singleton, who wrote Why Dogs Chase Cars, Lee Stringer, who writes about his life as a homeless person and a drug addict, and the recently published Wells Tower, who is a local author. And on Sunday, February the 14th, we have our gala where you can meet the authors and chat with them, being hosted by local cookbook authors, Jean Anderson, Sarah Foster, Morton Neal, Nancy McDermott, John and Dale Reed, and Bill Smith. You can sample their nibbles. And you can join us for lunch the following Monday at the Carolina Inn. And you can learn more about the event and buy tickets at orangeliteracy.org.
Okay, and thank you so much. Before we absolutely sign off, I want to give another thank you to the Carolina Theater of Durham for their support of the Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, and more information about them you can get at www.carolinatheater.org. And for information about Claudio's art show, go to claudioarts.com. And Claudio, I know you're out there acting right now, so I really don't like the phrase break a leg, but isn't that a theater phrase? give it good. So listen up and next week to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. And Rocco, thanks so much for coming in with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's always good to see you here. And Alice and Mary, have a great time this coming weekend.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for all the work that you do. Okay, until next week, we're signing off.